B Plus Wrestling Podcast.
The Moves.
Plus. Check it out! Here we go! You wanna mess with us? Let's just let it on the ground, let it on the ground. You wanna mess with us? Alright, ladies, gents, and non-binary friends, welcome to another B Plus podcast. I am your host, Greg Does Things, here to do the thing where we do the thing, talking about pro wrestling and all the things going on in the world thereof this week. Doing it a little bit different this week. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff going on in the world right now. We've addressed it over the past few weeks when we have been on stream. The death of George Floyd, the Black Lives Matter protests, the riots, the looting, just everything. It's been a hell of a year. We started out with this beautiful country of ours on fire. We've had a global pandemic, and now this. We talked about it. We played the Batista video, and obviously there's very heavy stuff that goes into this, and something, I don't want to say something good, but something that has come out of it is that it has shone a light on police brutality as a concept, and the fact that that's not something that is exclusive to the USA. It's not something, that racial bias is not something that's exclusive to the USA, and you can consider it racial bias, you consider it just an overuse of power by power-hungry, assholes that do the thing that they do. But it happens here as well, and, all the stuff at the protests was talking about, like here in Australia last weekend, all the stuff was talking about 432 or 433 indigenous deaths in custody since 1991, since the Royal Commission. And that number's actually incorrect, or it's increased. It's 437. And all across America, we've seen creators say, there's more important voices to listen to. And that's something that I've echoed. It's something that I believe, especially right now. Hearing me sit here and talk about NXT, hearing me sit here and talk about Backlash, I don't know if that's necessarily, it just doesn't seem right. There's way more important things to be doing. And so we organized, along with On the Turnbuckle, who had a very similar idea, we organized to have Joel Bateman, Michelle Hasluck, Erica Reed, and Davis Storm do a bit of a roundtable to talk about Indigenous issues and Indigenous issues in pro wrestling and the plight of, well, not the plight, but just what faces Indigenous workers and just sort of the state of pro wrestling in regards to that. And also, they do delve in the conversation into just wider societal issues. And it's a lovely chat. It's powerful. I really enjoyed listening to it. Enjoyed might be the wrong word. I don't know. It's so tough, but it's very powerful listening to this. If you only listen to one podcast that we put out this year, this is the podcast to listen to. I feel like this is very important, and I can't thank the participants enough for doing it. I can't thank Tony Shebeki enough for facilitating the recording, and we had the same idea, and they were happy to facilitate the recording and do all that stuff, and we can put out the roundtable chat here. So big thanks to them, and I'm going to hand it over. But before I do, I want to have 437 seconds of silence, inspired by the podcast blackouts. A lot of people putting out episodes that are 8 minutes and 30 seconds, whatever it was, long. No disrespect, obviously, I just don't remember the exact time code, but the amount of time that the police officer knelt on Derek Chauvin's neck, and it's they were doing that, and I thought in a similar vein I might do 437 seconds, a moment of silence for each death in custody since 1991, since that is it's insanity. And I'm going to hand over to them because the only thing I could think of to do was to use this platform that we have built here. There's not much I can do other than acknowledge and use what I have here to lift those voices up. And so that's what I'm going to do. And that's what we wanted to do here at the B+. So please enjoy this lovely roundtable chat. It's very powerful. Get in touch with us. Let us know what you think. Something coming out of this that I do want to say is a lot of people there's a lot of people blocking discussion, and I don't want to do that. If you disagree with anything, like, don't message the participants or anything. Definitely don't go engaging in any harassment or anything like that. But feel free to message me, and I'm happy to engage in chat. Like, even if we disagree on things, I'm happy to talk about things and reason things through with you and see how things go. But 437 seconds of silence, a moment for each Indigenous death in custody since 1991, since that Royal Commission. And then I'll hand over to Joel Bateman, who is going to handle the hosting duties from here. Thank you again.
I acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which we are having this discussion this evening. I pay my respects to the elders, past, present, and emerging, and the Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be listening this evening. I would also, on behalf of our guests and the wider Indigenous pro wrestling community, both here in Australia and overseas, sincerely want to thank Tony Lyle and Welchy from On the Turnbuckle, as well as Greg from the B Plus podcast, for allowing us to have such a discussion in a public forum. Speaking for everyone else in this kind of recording, it really means the world to us. So, as mentioned, my name is Joel Bateman. I am a Ngarri Ngarri man from the Rivera region in southern New South Wales. Joining me this evening from the Noongar tribe in the Whadjuk region in Western Australia is Michelle Haslock.
Hello.
You are there. Thank you, Michelle. From the Wadjuk tribe of central New South Wales, Erica Reid.
Yes. Hello. I am a raging woman.
You are here.
Woman.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent.
I'm here. All right.
Technical difficulties, you
down. On the planet for once.
And one of the biggest supporters of Indigenous pro wrestling in Australia and the godfather of Perth wrestling, Davis Storm.
That is me, sir. Thank you for the invite.
Not a problem. And before we get into it, I do want to send a special thank you to Aaron Dick from Bronco Busters, who I know has done interviews with all of us on separate occasions for a lot of the talking points and structure tonight, because I was coming in with an opinion also trying to moderate. So Erin took a lot of the heavy lifting on this one, so I can't thank her enough for that.
Love now, you where...
I don't know why that cracked me up so bad. It's possibly because I'm really nervous.
Chill, it's okay.
So we're here to talk about kind of the race issues, especially Indigenous issues that we deal with in professional wrestling. But something that got brought to my attention today when the episode was announced is, as we all know, many cultures have wrestling that dates back hundreds and hundreds of years, you know, before the modern era, and Australia is actually no exception. So Aboriginals in the Indigenous culture here in Australia actually had a traditional style of wrestling similar to sumo capoeira called, do you know what it's called?
Yep. Tail Three Tails.
Yeah, Tail Three Tails or Karita. And it's estimated that the first Karita tournament took place about 10,000 years ago, making it one of the oldest documented styles of wrestling or grappling on the planet. There is an amazing article that was sent to us by a good friend of ours, Neil. I can't remember his legitimate surname, and I almost called him his gimmick name, but Neil sent us an amazing article called Wrestling and Reconciliation, which I'll send to Tony, and hopefully you can drop that in the show notes at his discretion. So to kick us off, and I'll kick off with Michelle, if that's all right. How are you feeling? How are you feeling and coping with the surge of all the Black Lives Matter stuff that's come out over the last couple of weeks? A lot of support, of course, but also the incredibly confronting images and stories, not just recently, but from the past that have kind of resurfaced as these issues come back to life.
Personally, I'm exhausted. It's a lot to deal with. I haven't gotten as much support from people as I thought I would. I've probably got about 5 messages in total, to be honest, from people in the community, in the wrestling community. I've got a lot of people who kind of gone like, I support you, but they haven't acknowledged that publicly, which is pretty draining. Answering a lot of questions and stuff, the last 3 weeks have been pretty tough, honestly. Well, and yeah,
it's been super, super heavy. And Erica, you could probably touch on it a little bit more in terms of, because you and I were both obviously at the protest on Saturday. How have you found kind of taking it on in terms of, you know, like, obviously we're trying to fly the flag, as it were, but also we've kind of taken the role a lot of teacher and moderator as well. How have you found that?
Go ahead.
No, wait, who was it for? Was it for me or you?
It was for you,
Erica. I'm confused. Okay, all right, cool. Sorry. I've found the protest, like, it proved a point that you can show solidarity and get a message across peacefully, because that's what they did. Like, we did do that. So I think that was a really eye-opening thing and a very cool thing to be a part of, because we, like, yeah, we're angry. Yeah, we're pissed off. Yeah, we've had enough. Like, it's not cool. It's not a game anymore. Like, how many more people have to die in custody and whatnot before it's not an issue anymore? Because it shouldn't be an issue, obviously, in any culture. That, like, their job is to help protect us and to keep us safe, not do the opposite. But seeing everyone at the protest on Saturday, it was empowering. It was a little bit emotional. It was overwhelming. It was anger. It was a relief. Like, there were so many mixed emotions with it, because you could see people healing from it, but you could see people getting angry. But obviously they weren't projecting violence. They were just doing it peacefully. And that's what the elders wanted, and that's what our ancestors would have wanted. They don't want war. They don't want fighting. They just want to be, like, peaceful. They just want equality. So, yeah. My rant.
And then Dave, I guess you kind of sit in the middle, because you were obviously very much a senior figure in Australian wrestling. I'm not calling you old. You're in the best shape of all of us. But you're obviously a senior figure in Australian wrestling, and you're obviously incredibly supportive of the Indigenous community. But Welty said before we started recording that, because he was at the protest with us as well, and he felt, you know, a massive sense of almost kind of shame being there as a white man.
Yep.
You obviously kind of walking, you know, balancing on a razor blade between being senior in the community and not only being senior, but being senior and very outspoken in the community. How have you found that? Because you have taken on that kind of educational role as well, even though it wasn't necessarily your place, you, as you always do, have obviously stepped up.
Sure. It's something I've come to tentatively, and it's something I've come to very slowly in my life. You know, I'm almost 41 years old now, and in my youth, I think, even though I experienced racism also, obviously being an Asian Australian, that still I bought into the same narratives about Indigenous Australians that I was taught at school. I bought into the same history. I you know, without even realizing, so many little untruths about people are sewn into your vision of them throughout your years, whether it's by aunties or uncles or parents or school teachers, that just, there are so many things that just permeate you so slowly and so in such tiny little ways that you don't even notice that this is happening to you, and you consider yourself a reasonable person, then you look at people who are outwardly racist, like the KKK, and you think, what would it take for someone to get there? And then if you tick off a box of ways that Indigenous people have said that society has hurt them over the years, the little jokes, the you know, jokes about being out of work or jokes about ending up in jail, and they're just... I'm sure people are not trying to be mean-spirited when they do these things, but these things hurt people. These words truly hurt people, and it influences the way that we think about people. I got to an age where I had to reconcile my own behaviour and realise, although I had been subject to racism and I had been subject to feeling less than, that I'd then projected that onto other people as well, that I'd used words that I probably shouldn't use, that I'd talked about people in manners in which they didn't deserve to be talked about. And, you know, my role now is not to lecture from up on high, because I'm no better than anybody else and I've made those mistakes. And I hope that by speaking out and speaking from an honest place of, I'm not here to, I can't fix the problem, but I do know that for a very long time that, you know, there were people within the community who felt ashamed isn't the right word, but they didn't feel proud to stand up in the way that Erica has to embrace their culture and be able to promote their culture as part of who they are. I can go to the ring and expose who I am and tell my story and not feel like any judgment's going to be placed on me. And other people like yourself and Michelle came through at a time where, you know, racism was still rife in our industry. It's still rife in our industry. But that, you know, that Erica feels enough of a sense of pride and that there is enough support there within the community that she feels like she can go out and do this, that's a really powerful statement. And for me looking on, it's on me as a leader to try and support people in the community to feel welcome. You know, it's embarrassing that that someone like Michelle in the house that I helped build would feel embarrassed about embracing her own culture. And, you know, that's something that I'm trying to reconcile as I get older.
I 100% agree with you because you bang on, like, the era that I came in and that Michelle came in, racism was really, really ripe. Going back to something Michelle said earlier where you said that a lot of people haven't talked publicly, because I've had this discussion with a few other people. I'd love to get your opinion on it, yeah. Michelle, as kind of why you think people haven't, you know, whether it's social media or, you know, to their friends and family, why they haven't said, like, so supported publicly, I guess.
I think inherently people don't like to feel uncomfortable.
Yes.
I think people like to think that what they're doing is enough. And you can't just be, I'm not racist. You have to be a person who goes, you know what? What you're saying or what you're doing as someone who is a colleague or a friend or a family member, you know, that is not right. And I think a lot of people don't like to have that discussion with people. They feel like not saying anything is enough. And, you know, we've been uncomfortable for a very, very fucking long time, man.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. It's very much been good enough for long enough. Yeah. And it's definitely not that anymore. And Erica, I can't speak for you, but I know I've received a few messages of people going, I 100% support you, but I don't want to say the wrong thing. And yeah. I feel there were instances, especially in the last 7 days, where people said things with the best intentions,
yeah.
but whether they're just not in tune of the issues. For example, a good friend of mine who wrestles in New South Wales said all lives matter, but not following the news the way he does, the way we obviously do, because, you know, we're in up to our eyeballs, didn't realize what that meant. He said it 100% to try and support, but ended up putting his foot in it and getting ripped to shreds for it. So it's, I don't know, how have you found that, Erica, in terms of people kind of, you know, they want to support, but they don't want to say the wrong thing?
To be honest, I was always like, I don't know, how do I explain this? It's like people have shown, like, I've commented on a couple of the posts that I've made the past week or so, just saying, like, all lives matter stuff. And, like, look, they're right. Every life matters on this earth. Every life has a soul. Every life has, a meaning. Every life matters on this earth. That I'm not denying that. But when you're a minority and your community isn't approved by your own country, and you are blatantly still disrespected and still not listened to, like, that's the main, like, this is a massive communication issue. Like, no one wants to listen. And just like Michelle said, no one wants to be uncomfortable and have that conversation, but tough luck. Like, I don't give a shit anymore. Like, we have to have this conversation because our lives don't matter because the system doesn't let them matter. It's taught that we are savages or we are whatever, which is not the case. We just need to listen and just chill out, listen to each other, teach each other new things. Like, it's all lives matters, but our lives aren't going to matter until people start respecting us and, like, respecting our culture and embracing each other. We can all embrace each other. We have proven that we can be a multicultural community. Just like at the protest, I saw every race. I saw I saw Australians. I saw British people. I saw European people. I saw Middle Eastern people. I saw Indian people. I saw African people. I saw every walk of life there, all of ages. And it proved that in a big area we can all get along and we can all just embrace each other. And that's what happened. And it's just like, I don't understand why it's not a thing. I don't understand why people are still don't want to have their own experiences and learn from their own experiences. They're too scared living in what other people have told them. Just like Davis said, like, people create these judgments. So I don't know.
You said something really important in terms of, having the conversation. And Davis, I've got a personal question for you and Michelle. Feel free to answer it, but as parents with kids who are kind of old enough, and we like, because I've got two kids who are 9 and 11. Dave, yours are a similar age, and Chell, yours are a little bit younger. But how have you gone explaining what's going on in the world? First of all, Dave, to your kids, obviously, as an Asian Australian, and then Michelle, because your kids are obviously Indigenous, trying to explain to them, hey, this is kind of, you know, in, because honestly, the main reason I went to the protest on Saturday, because in 10 years, I genuinely feel like it's going to be the I remember where I was when.
Yeah,
it's, look, I'll be honest, I haven't had a specific conversation with the kids about what's going on. And that's not specifically to do with the issue of race. It's more so to do with the issue of news, that just news is so overwhelming these days. That I have tried to, where possible, preserve the kids from that while sort of filtering information for them. Obviously, between myself and my wife, Michelle, we're very conscious of the things that we say in the house and how those affect the kids. And when the kids come to us with issues of, you know, a kid at school said this about another kid today, or a kid said something about a group of people, we try to have the conversation with them and we ask them the question. And you know, I don't believe that inherently human beings are out to hate, because I see in my kids that they don't have that. They don't have that judgment. When you try to explain to them that there are people who don't like people because of the color of their skin, or they think they're better than someone through some kind of thing that is no... You know, it's not a choice that they're making, but it's just part of who they are. The kids can barely grasp that concept. It's so foreign to them, because I'm hoping at least that, you know, the in terms of education, that we are slowly improving, that we are teaching kids to be more inclusive. You know, my kids, they'd never dream of they've never said anything negative about a boy wanting to be with a boy or a girl loving a girl. And those are open conversations that we have in our house. And when we talk about marriage, the kids, my son will say, or, you know, when a man marries a man or a girl marries a girl, like they're very open to being educated and to being influenced in easy ways. And that is why we have to have the conversation. That is why we have to improve the level of education. And I truly believe that what the girls have said is right, that people don't want to have that uncomfortable conversation. And that I think that is so much more about they don't want to argue with their friends. And that's, you know, I'm fortunate that I'm at a point now where I'm a 40-year-old man and my opinion on things is quite well formed. I have a strong sense of who I am, and somebody giving me an alternate point of view, I'm more than happy to listen to them and then respond to them. But it is harder when you're younger. I think that there is so much conflicting information going around, and people try to, you know, I think the thing, at least for me on the outside looking in, the thing that has been damaging, but also really, really obvious, has just been the number of people who, if I see someone who can post about Black Lives Matters and says the thing that happened here is absolutely disgusting, whether it be what happened in the States or Indigenous deaths in custody here in Australia, if someone can say that is a disgusting act and we need to do better, and then at the same time also say, hey, looters or rioters, what they're doing isn't right. Cool. Okay. I can understand. Looting isn't good and deaths in custody is terrible also. But to people who are very quick to jump on the counterpoint of, well, looting certainly isn't the way to get your point across, they're very much missing the point. Can you not point to the shit thing that caused this in the first place? Can you not point to the oppression that caused this in the first place? This is not, this is not just a simple case of one act happened in the United States and now people are looting Nike. That's not it. It is a level of frustration that has built up over such a long period of time. And we have these moments where you feel like things are going to change. I'm sure that African-American people during the civil rights movement felt like, we're finally here, we're going to get a seat at the table. And here we are 40 plus years down the road, still having the same conversations about how we cannot get equality for people of color.
Yep.
Well, you're bang on, because like realistically we're here 200 years down the road having these conversations now as Indigenous Australians. But I think you touched on something really well when you were talking about your kids, where no one's born racist and no one's born homophobic. We're very much products of our environment. Mm-hmm. Michelle, with two Indigenous kids, how have you kind of found this time?
Okay, so I had a pretty upsetting incident happen. My mum is quite dark, and Aria heard at school that a white policeman killed a black man for no reason by kneeling on his neck, and came home and was like, are the cops going to do that to Nanny now? How do you go, you know, not all people are bad, you know, it doesn't matter about their skin colour and stuff like that. You can say that over and over again, but she is legitimately worried about police officers now. And I've tried my best to be like, not everyone is like that, but this is what she's heard and she's formed an opinion on it. Lara's okay. It's Aria, the younger one, as like, but not everyone's like that. Not everyone is like that. And I can only say that over and over and over again. And you know, saying Nanny was a good person. Nanny is a good person. Nanny doesn't do anything wrong, but he didn't do anything wrong either. Very tough. Very tough. And when a couple of days after that happened, like a really small incident happened at a shopping centre, and it just kind of, it knocked me for six. Like, we went to the shops, the girls wanted some shoes. I brought them some shoes. They changed their shoes in the shopping centre because they wanted to wear their new shoes. Okay, no big deal, everyone does that. Mm-hmm. Another shop with my mum, wearing new shoes. I gave my mum the receipt. She had the other shoes in a bag, and they stopped the kids at the door because the girls had new shoes on. If the girls were with me, that wouldn't have happened. But because my mum's darker than I am, you know, it's like trying to explain that not everyone's here.
It's that systemic racism that exactly you were talking about.
Stop being shit.
I promise this will take a positive turn soon, but I kind of want to get all the really heavy shit out of the way at the beginning. The On the Turnbuckle guys put up and kind of threw it open to the wider social media verse. So I do have a few questions from kind of people in our wrestling community. That they did want to kind of ask the table, as it were. So Rebel at Ring the Bell. God, I hate that Twitter handle. But we all know Rihanna. We know Rihanna's great. And
we love you, Ray.
Her Canvas Chats podcast. I did a podcast with her on Monday. It feels like about 6 weeks ago. Realistically, it was yesterday. And we talked about a lot of the stuff we're covering tonight. But she asks, what has been an offensive moment you have encountered from a fan or one of your peers due to a complete lack of understanding about your cultural background as opposed to flat-out racism? Erica, can you go first?
Okay.
Probably my favorite incident was I turned heel at a specific company and I got called a black boonga bitch.
Jesus.
And I was like, you do realize that it's a heel turn, first of all. Like, I'm doing a thing here. It's a part of the show. I don't know if you know that, fella, but since you want to go racial, I don't know. Like, I didn't think that had anything to do with it. But then yet again, I take that risk when I use my culture as a big part of me in my wrestling and my everyday person, because I wear it like it's a part of my heart. I can't not feel it. So I also got to take that risk as well. So you just got to have a tough skin and be like, okay, you're just an ignorant, drunk dickhead that obviously, you know, don't really get life that much. But at the same time, like, I can't, like I still stand up for myself. Like, I obviously told him to get stuffed, but, like, I don't know.
The fact that it happened is
yeah, the fact enough. The fact that, like, you had to jump straight to that, like, you could have called me a witch, or you could have called me, like, I don't know, just a bitch would have been fine, I guess. Yeah. Like, you know, but again, I take that risk, so I'm not too heartbroken about it, but at the same time I was a bit like, holy shit, calm down.
That's quite telling though, that you have, and I think Michelle's the same, just from having been with her for so long, that you let that roll off your back and you excuse that behavior by saying that you proudly wear your heritage out there on your sleeve. But I don't think anybody else would think that it's reasonable that if you wore your ethnicity as part of your ring getup, that it would be acceptable for someone to racially sledge you.
I mean, you're right, yeah.
But you've excused it because you are just so conditioned to that sort of behavior.
Yeah.
What about you, Dave?
I mean, look, I'm a terrible case for this. Most of the things that I've encountered over my time have just been boys gently ribbing. And I was talking to a very good friend of mine who's also a person of color, Devlin Reeds. And we were discussing how a lot of us who come from an ethnic background or from an Asian background or from an Indigenous background, we use humor with our friends as a way to diffuse a lot of our feelings around these things. But him and I were both questioning today, because we are two guys who will laugh about anything. We will create a joke about anything. We will go to the furthest lengths and the most unacceptable lengths of things to make jokes about, because it's just a way of us kind of dealing with how horrific some things are. But we tried to talk about that today, that we feel like by doing that, we've normalized racist conversation, that a lot of people can speak about you in that way now, or speak about me in that way, by just being a part of the conversation, just being involved in the same fun conversation that we're having, but that in some sense, maybe that normalizes racist behavior in their head, and that perhaps in order to preserve free speech and in order to preserve, this, it's just silly banter when it's amongst us. But, you know, if a white person on the street who I didn't know talked about me in the same way, I would be thinking, what the hell is your problem? And are you looking for a fight? So it's really tricky. Like, I've never been, if anything, you know, I'm on the flip side, that I lent into my Asian heritage for one performance so heavily that I was probably the racist, being racist to myself. And my heritage.
I remember that show.
it was done with the intent of comedy, but at the same time, again, by allowing an audience to laugh at that sort of behavior, am I part of the problem when I do those sorts of things? The answer, sadly, is probably yes.
Well, I think you hit a very important nail on the head, where the Australian culture is very much hanging shit on your friends.
Yes.
Like, that's how we connect. That's how, you know, we converse. And, I mean, you can speak for anyone who's gone overseas. Erica, I know you've probably dealt with it. And I know I dealt with it. When you tell your American friend to get fucked, they fire up like, you want to fight. Where... Do you know what I mean? Where very much we just hang shit on our friends. And you're exactly right, Dave, where, you know, you'll lean in, and I'm guilty of it. I'm sure I can't speak for the other two, but, you know, you'll lean into, I guess, the race card as a sense of humor, and you'll put humor up as a defense mechanism with your mates because, you know, either it's just banter with your mates and, you know, there's no malice behind it, or it's the first line of defense as opposed to, again, firing up and having that uncomfortable conversation.
Yep, absolutely.
What about you, Michelle? Have you, well, obviously, you obviously came into wrestling under Davis and in a promotion like EPW and with someone like Dave at the helm, kind of knocking that stuff on the head, but that hasn't been your only promotion. So, and you've traveled Australia pretty heavily. Have you dealt with, you know, like in regards to Rhiannon's question?
Well, for a long time, I didn't really openly say that I was Indigenous. So how can people hang shit on me if they don't know? It was bad enough being a woman's wrestler. You get crap for being a woman's wrestler. I didn't really want to have the added intensity of having that Aboriginality added on top of that. So when people started to put two and two together that my mum is my mum, I'd say, you know, I was Aboriginal, people would be like, what, like your grandparents? Or question your Aboriginality.
It's like, don't get me started.
That's one of the most annoying things where we get questioned for our Aboriginality. And one name that came up a lot when this podcast was announced and who was going to be on it, I don't know about you guys, but I got messaged a whole bunch and everyone said, what about Ace Wilson? For those of you who don't know, Ace has been an amazing ambassador for Aboriginal pro wrestling for about a decade and a half now, but he does kind of keep to himself. And to be completely honest, I did reach out to him about this podcast, but he was happy to kind of let us cover it. But to give you an idea of kind of the racism that still goes on. So I, like you, Shell, have not worn my ethnicity on my sleeve, so to speak. I've been in wrestling for 18 years, to give you an idea. And there's a company that I'm meant to be working for later in the year who shall remain nameless because they realize the error of their ways. And as this all started up, I approached them and said, would you look at doing an acknowledgement of country to start the show in the same vein as what EPW have done? And their response was, could we turn it into an angle? Could the ring announcer be opening the show and you interrupt with the elder, interrupt the show and do the well country? Now, I read the four
Can
messages.
Can I take a dump in your mailbox?
Well, so this particular person is incredibly lucky. I read all five messages one after the other and not caught the first one and blown my top. And they went, wait, hang on, that's fucked up, isn't it? Oh my God, that's a horrible idea. I'm really, really, really sorry. And I went, look, I understand where you're coming from. This isn't the Attitude Era anymore. If you haven't turned the television on, this shit doesn't fly anymore. Needless to say, they're definitely doing an acknowledgement of country. And if they ever bring it up again, I'm threatening to flame them publicly. However, in a more positive note, and Davis, I'm going to turn to you for this because you have your finger on the pulse, both from a wrestling perspective and a management perspective. What are promotions in Australia doing to actively call out racism, both at shows and online?
I can speak for EPW that I know when we first started doing Acknowledgement of Country, I honestly thought, I couldn't believe that we were first at the table for starters. And then, and I might be ahead of the curve there, but I think there was definitely one other promotion that was doing it, possibly in New South Wales. We're talking obviously about not one of the prominent promotions. And I just assumed that once we started, everyone would just fall in lockstep because I was somewhat embarrassed that it took us this long to look at doing it, that it never occurred to us. And through going to school assemblies with my kids and realizing they do it at every assembly, they do it at every school gathering. And at first, you know, your brain trying to process it goes, why are we doing this so often? Until your brain goes, oh, hang on a second. We're on Aboriginal land, which seems like an extremely hard thing for people to accept and process. And it took hearing it that many times at my at, events that I would go to, and you'd notice it at first at big ceremonial things like big football games and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then over time, you started to see it permeate into the culture, into regular society. And, you know, I was shocked. Oh dear, we've been really slow adopters that professional wrestling likes to think of itself as this progressive place where all people are welcome. And maybe on some fronts it is, but the quieter side of racism means that we're happy to support our individuals behind the scenes, but we are not happy to openly support the community. That became obvious as soon as we did the first one. And the first comment, I proudly put up a picture of Michelle's mum who did the very first acknowledgement of country for us. The first comment on it was basically, woe is me, why does everyone have to blame everything on the white man?
I remember that so much.
And I couldn't believe it. But like I said, I just kind of expected that other promotions would just kind of fall in step. And I think it's honestly one of those things that's, you know, out of sight, out of mind, that it doesn't affect those people. And I'm not talking about white people. I'm talking about people who run promotions. It doesn't affect them necessarily. They don't see it. They don't experience it. So it's easier to ignore. For me, having a relationship with Michelle and having a relationship with Michelle's mum, who is honestly one of the most inspiring people I've ever met, that, you know, for me to see a lot of ignorant Australians say, you know, you need to get over this stuff, it's all in the past. To see Michelle's mum, who has been touched firsthand by institutional racism in this country, and the way that she carries on and holds her head up high, and still wears her culture very proudly, while not being angry, or having that anger in her, but not expressing that publicly, that she would still be a face of reconciliation to anybody who would be willing to speak to her. That very much motivates you to get out there and push harder for someone like Narelle, who despite everything she's been through, is just an absolute picture of grace. And she could be angry and she could be furious and she could attack, and she doesn't. She looks to make things better for her community and her culture and for everyone in the wider community as well.
I completely... Sorry, you go.
I don't know, Dave, if you remember seeing my mum before the show?
Yes.
She was legitimately so worried that people were going to be so ill-receiving of that. She was worried that people were going to turn their backs on her and walk out.
Yeah.
She was very close to not doing it.
I know Troy Hunter, who's a friend of ours here in Western Australia as well, part of the wrestling community here. And Troy did it for the Progress EPW show. And same thing, he was running around backstage and he was making a joke of it, but he almost said that there was a good side of his ancestors talking in one ear saying, mate, how unbelievable is this? You're going to get to go out on a wrestling show and do acknowledgement to country and we're proud of you. And he said the other side of his ancestors are in his ear saying, you need to go out there and scream, white devil, what have you done to my country? What have you done to my people? The conflict that my friend was having to go through backstage, and much like Michelle's mum, I think he very much had that thought before he went out there of, What if they boo me? What if just one person jeers me? What if they don't applaud at the end of this? How am I going to feel having gone out there to do something to pay respects to my culture? How will I feel if just one person turns their back on me? It's heartbreaking to see people go through that.
Well, Erica, if you cast your mind back, so the company that I work for here in Melbourne, MCW, we didn't do acknowledgement of country at our main shows, and the promoter Mikey J has come out and said, I don't know why we didn't, and we're going to now. Unfortunately, COVID-19 happened and we haven't promoted an event since, but we run the all women shows at a very progressive LGBTIQ venue here in Melbourne called Evie's Disco Diner, and they approached us country and best of those, but Sean Hawkins is a very tall, very white male. who was our ring announcer, and did quietly come over and go, what if they boo me? And it's just, I can't speak for you, Erica, but it's the most heartbreaking thing to hear, that you kind of feel that, oh my God, like, I can't believe that you think that they're going to boo you, but holy shit, they might boo you. it's just the worst thing. But then, I don't know if you remember, Erica, but it sticks in my mind because I was refereeing that show, like the genuine applause that went up after it, because everyone went, oh, well, like Dave just said, why aren't we doing this? And the applause that went up from the crowd, like, it warmed my heart. I don't know if you remember it, but.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I do remember that. It's nice. Like, it's, I don't think people understand what the acknowledgement actually means. And I think that's why people are hesitant to use it, because they don't actually, like, it's a blessing. It's,
can you touch on why you think other promotions don't do it?
Yeah, I think they're scared. They don't want to have that conversation. They don't want to be that promotion that has heat for being like accepting of other cultures, because for some reason that's a problem. So I feel like people are scared. That's all it friggin' is. Like, people just need to start being loud. They need to be proud. They just need to do it. Like, I don't understand why it's a difficult thing to kind of wrap your head around. Like, an acknowledgement is the ancestors blessing us and letting us use this land for what we want to use it for, whether it be a performance or a speech or a birthday or whatever. It's a blessing. It's inviting our ancestors and other people to come in and gather and enjoy this occasion. Like, that's honestly what it is. It's respect.
Isn't that, like, it's just such a
blessing.
It's such a nice way to start a wrestling show. Like, we're acknowledging the land that we're on. You're welcome. Come in. Let's do this.
Fight with me.
Yeah, it's such a, and it takes like a minute or two. It doesn't even take a lot of time from a show. It's such a small thing that's so lovely.
The aunties and uncles aren't known for long speeches, all right? They like to get in, out, get their shit done. That's it, they're done. They don't have to worry about it. They don't want it to be all about them. They just want to bless the ancestors. They want to invite them in. We just want to, it's honestly, an acknowledgement brings people together. That's the whole aim of it. It's to respect the land, respect the elders, and respect that we are using this part for the occasion. And I don't get why people are weird about it. Like, it's not like we're, I don't know, asking anything of anyone. Like, I don't know. It's just, it's a 2-second thing. I don't get it. It's just weird.
All about the type five. You're right. I mean, what the intro I did at the start of the show that I screwed up twice took me all of 7 seconds. Like, it's not a big deal. But, and Michelle, I'll float this to you first. In the event, well, we've discussed a couple of times it where, like, systemic racism will come through in terms of being booed, whether they booed an acknowledgement of country or racist comments directed at talent. Because I got this question a lot when the podcast went up. What do you think fans can do to be more vigilant about racism at shows?
I think it's the same thing as, like, when you're with a group of mates. If someone's saying something that you don't think is appropriate, hit them up for it first. Because some people are just so ignorant of the things that come out of their mouths, they might not even realise that what they're saying is hurting someone.
Yep.
So if you see it, stamp it out in person. And if it does get too much after a couple of warnings, you know, get the security, get whoever's in charge running that floor and tell them. Don't let people get away with that crap.
Well, further to your point, Erica, I know you work for a promotion here in Melbourne who I won't name because I don't necessarily think it's the fault of the promotion, but their fans are known as being, for lack of a better term, pretty awful, especially in terms of some of the stuff they say towards women, LGBTQ people, and race. In the event, if there are recurrent reports of, you know, racist or sexist behavior in the crowd and the promotion makes no action to prevent or condemn it, what do you believe should be the next action?
I mean, if, like Michelle said, obviously confront the person, whether it be the performer. Like, I know I've had a comment. I remember the comment was pretty bad, but I can't really remember exactly what it was. And I was managing Sid, and Sid just shut that down straight away. He just stopped. He had a guy in a hold, and he just looked at the guy and said, "Shut the fuck up," and then just kept wrestling. And everyone was like, "Oh shit. Oh wow. Okay, cool. All right, we can do that. Okay, fair enough." And to be honest, the crowd, like, I know which crowd you're talking about, they've gotten a lot better because there has been security and stuff, and people have been pointed out, like, hey, that guy's been too much, and people have had words with them. So people have gotten better at those crowds. But in, like, in saying that, I reckon the next step would be, like, if the person doesn't learn, kick them out. If they try to come back again, give them another chance. Give people a second chance. Everyone's deserving of a second chance. They could have just had a couple of drinks and, again, didn't realize what they were saying was hurting someone.
Yeah.
And they've sobered up. They've come to their senses. They're like, shit, let's try again. I'm all for that. But if you don't learn by the third time, you should probably be banned. Like, I think, like, it's just like any pub or club or anything like that. Any racial fights or anything happens, that person gets banned and they're not allowed to come back to 6 months or whatever. And, like, I think people need to start doing that. Treat it like a proper event. Like, yeah, okay, cool. Someone's being a dick. Give them a warning. Kick them out. I don't know.
Furthermore to your point, I've got a question here from Kevin of voicesofwrestling.com, who actually lives in Western Australia and I believe works with EPW pretty closely. Davis, I'm going to direct this one at you. What responsibilities do promotions have to deal with racism or sexism, either internally or from fans?
I think they have the same responsibility, whether it's internal or whether it's to do with the audience. That as Emma's just mentioned, like, you need to address the behavior first. You need to address the person and try and work out whether or not there is malice behind what they're doing, or whether this is just someone who's misinformed, or they didn't understand how their words were going to hurt or how their actions were.
Or they're trying to get a reaction.
Sure. Particularly, you know, when it comes to sexism, like, I very much think it is very much still like racism, that it is.
Yep.
It is now the joke behind the scenes, that everyone laughs and nudges each other and makes these jokes to and fro. And that's almost the coping mechanism for the fact that, you know, there are still plenty of people that feel that way. There are plenty of people who feel that, you know, lots of women are getting opportunities that men aren't, just in terms of just in order to fill representation. You know, what responsibility does the promotion have? They need to address the person and the behavior, where it's coming from. We need to address the person who's affected by it also, and make sure that they're okay, and ask what we can do for them. You know, if they are uncomfortable with this behavior, if they need an apology for the behavior, then we need to facilitate that. And if we can't facilitate that, then I think that kind of tells you all you need to know about the person that you're dealing with as well. That, if someone realizes the error of their way, they should be willing to apologize for their behavior. And, you know, a lot of times things are just misunderstandings, and we're able to come to a compromise and move on. But we can't allow these things to slide, because it very much does just become the norm if we let it go. You know, a decade and a half ago, it was fine for WWE fans to chant "slut" at Stephanie McMahon. That's not acceptable anymore. But it was not acceptable because of education. So, you know, you need to spot that poor behavior. And I think, for the most part, when people are inappropriate in an audience, at least these days, that people get uncomfortable. No one really gets behind them or cheers them or joins in chanting with them. People just feel awkward and uncomfortable. But sometimes it is hard for people to take that next step and report that person, or talk to them and pat them on the back and say, "Hey, mate, that's not on." So it's really imperative on the promotion and the performers to take onus for how people are treated in our environment.
Michelle, I've got a question that kind of bookends what we've been talking about kind of nicely. It's from Nick Collette, who obviously is a massive supporter of Australian wrestling. All around the country, and I know he's listening. And Scarlett Harris, who's just authored a book on women's wrestling that I believe will come out before the end of 2020. They both ask what changes need to be made or could be made in Australian wrestling to be more welcoming and respectful of Indigenous Australians and also make Indigenous fans feel more comfortable at events as well.
That's a tough question because it's a...
I didn't ask it to be easy.
No,
none of this is.
No, none of this is. It's
just making me sweat so much. Like, you have no idea.
I'm just trying to think right now. It's like, if someone comes to a wrestling show, right, they've got to be a wrestling fan of some kind, right? Like, So why isn't every single person who comes to a wrestling show looked at the same by every single person there? Does that make sense?
It does. And I think, like, obviously we talked about the acknowledgement of country. And, like, I can say with a relative degree of certainty, once COVID-19 is over, 99% of the promotions in this country are going to move forward with doing that at the beginning of their events.
Yeah.
Well, Davis was very much kind of the leader in that, in terms of calling companies out on their bullshit, for lack of a better term. And unfortunately, no other events got ran before we could kind of see people put their money where their mouth is. But in terms of fans, obviously, that's fair enough. If you're coming as a punter, you should be welcomed as such. But what about for talent? Is there anything you think companies could be doing better?
I don't know. Erica? I really don't know.
I reckon, like... I reckon
we have a special guest.
Well, who's the special guest? Oh, hello! Hello!
This is an audio recording, so it doesn't help anyone listening, but one of Davis's lovely children has decided to join us. Anyway, Erica, you were saying?
I'm trying to think about that question. Yeah, it wasn't an easy one. I reckon having more people... Look, the only way people are going to be less uncomfortable about it is if there's more... use of culture. Like, why don't we have more cultural gimmicks? I reckon that would definitely bring kids in more, or even wrestling in rural parts of Australia. That's something that I've thought about doing before, like just running my own thing somewhere. I don't know.
Doing the same thing today.
Yeah, like something like that, or
almost like, opening an invitation and being like, "You are welcome to come." If
of course,
running wrestling in more kind of heavily indigenously populated areas, because admittedly, like 90% of the audience usually, you know, like we don't see a lot of indigenous people come to shows, and that kind of leads me to a question that came from one of David Storm's friends, actually. We believe that Indigenous Australians make up about 3% of the Australian population.
Yep.
Would you think that that percentage is reflected in the Australian wrestling business, or is it even lower than that? Is it higher than we think, with some wrestlers playing it close to the chest? And Erica, I'll throw this one to you, but I'll preface it with the Stomping Ground event in Perth that was meant to be, I believe it was the end of this month, start of next, really opened.
It was meant to be in July.
Really opened my eyes with how many Indigenous wrestlers we have. And I was seeing names pop up in that group chat. I'm like, holy shit, your crew? Like, no way. Like, just time and time and time and time again. Like, do you think it's reflected in Australian wrestling? And do you think there are still other wrestlers who are just like, this is my heritage, but I'm not going to say anything for fear of the aforementioned?
Yeah. That's it, man. Like, I am lucky enough that I was raised by who wanted me to embrace my weirdness, because I am a bit of a weird cat. And they always, like, my dad, like, we don't have the perfect relationship, but as I get older, our relationship is getting better because of culture, because that's common ground and we're learning it together. And I feel like he taught me to not be scared. There's no reason to be scared. If I'm proud of something, why can't I express that? So I think people if they want to, like, again, it's a big ask and it's like, it's not a common thing and everyone's going to express themselves how they feel is right. And that's their right. And that's awesome. I'm all for people expressing themselves, but I believe people should, like, yeah, if they want to express their culture, I think it needs to be in your face more, because I don't think people are doing it in your face enough. They're too scared to do it. And, like, yeah, I understand why you're scared. But, mate, it's not going to change if you're not scared. Our ancestors were scared. Our elders are scared. But if they weren't scared and they didn't get past things, we wouldn't have evolved even a little bit to where we are today.
Yeah.
Like, we just need a really just do it. Just, we need more people expressing themselves in a proud cultural way, whether it be a flag or whether it be face paint, whether, I don't know, however you want to express it, but big or small, get it out there. Why not? Yeah. Like, why not?
I think you're bang on it. Like, the four of us in this discussion have all kind of been flagged as we're the ones doing it for the next generation, because with that Stomping Ground show, looking at the roster, there are so many people in there, you know, 6 months in, a year in, 18 months into wrestling, who aren't wearing their heart on their sleeve, as it were. And I think it's, and like, especially credibility to you two girls, that you're wearing your heart on your sleeve and you're calling a spade now, because in 10 years when, touch wood, if we're not around professional wrestling anymore, people like Rochelle Rogue and Aiden Miller, and I think it's Miles Malice in New South Wales, can be proud of these things, even though, you know, the color of their skin may not reflect their ethnicity, much like you and, you know, all of us really, but the fact that we'll then be able to move forward and they'll point back at us, you know what I mean? Because very much enough is enough.
And another person that, when I was, like, I totally understand that it's daunting and it's scary that you might cop heat for it, but people are only going to be mad for a little bit. They'll get over it eventually. They're telling us to get over it, so why can't they? Like, I'm just expressing myself. And I had, when I first started wrestling, I understand I didn't really show my culture because obviously I was focused on learning how to wrestle and doing it safely. And I didn't really have a character. But now that I do, I want to just, like, I had one mentor who was Mana in Perth, in New Horizon Pro Wrestling. He's Maori. And when I first met him, he just embraced me. Like, just, we sat down and we just had a chat about culture for hours. And, like, so much time went past. And I'll forever be grateful for him because he kind of told me and reassured me that you're doing the right thing. You are, like, don't ever be scared because someone else is telling you to be scared. Just do it. And he has embraced me, and, like, he's a native culture as well. And he did the same when he was wrestling. He was very loud and proud of who he was. And I think more people need to be like that. More people need to be loud. More people need to be proud. And people need to come together. If you support that message, then if another person's getting ragged at a show, stand up. If you're a fan, stand up and be like, hey, no, I support that person. You shut the fuck up. Like, if we all come together as a community and build this up, we're just going to create, like, a beautiful, like, netting, and everyone's going to be able to sit in this netting and embrace each other. And it's going to make things easier to deal with and easier to have the hard conversations when you have support. And I think that's a big thing.
I love that. I love that imagery of kind of that supportive net. And Nick Mana, you know, is a very proud Maori, and I think the work he does with culture is super important. And I know that, obviously, you know, Dave, you don't work with him a lot, but I do hope someone does shine a light on the work Nick does in terms of culture one day. And I also did want to touch base. I can't say their name due to contractual reasons, but there is another very prominent Maori wrestler who's contracted to a major organization, who sent across some of these questions as well and is fully supportive of everything that we're trying to do over here. So big ups to Miscellaneous Man. I'm not allowed to say the name of due to legal reasons.
Mr. Anonymous.
But anyone who can read between the lines can probably work out who it is. However, Davis, I've got a question for you, and it kind of talks a little bit more about behind-the-scenes stuff, because now, please correct me if I'm wrong, is Devlin Reeves Aboriginal?
No, he isn't. He's mixed South African.
Right. Ooh. But you've very much championed different ethnicities and different cultures in the time that APW's been around. When do you think specifically we'll see more Indigenous performers at the top of the cards and headlining shows? Because now there's very much a point where, you know, we are somewhat of a fixture across cards all across the country. But what does it look like to have Indigenous performers headlining events from a booking perspective without it being tokenistic?
Sure. And I think that's the difficult thing at this stage, is just finding the right performers for the right stages. That just, it is a really difficult balancing act. And, you know, representation has been something that in the past, I would say, I would look out into employment circles, and perhaps in employment circles, I would say representation is important, and you need to, you need to have something out there to sort of give people a chance, give them an opportunity that perhaps they haven't had in the past. But yet within sporting circles, I've always kind of looked at it as I always looked at it somewhat cynically, I suppose, as a performer myself, because I'm like, just inevitably the cream will rise to the top. Through having kids, I've very much seen, particularly with my daughter, that when she watches wrestling, she doesn't look for the best wrestler that she sees. She looks for the best female wrestler that she sees. When she watches the TV and she wants to relate to a character, she looks for a strong female character to relate to. When she watches the TV and the boys are playing footy, she couldn't give a shit. But she turns on the TV and the ladies are playing AFLW and she's drawn to it. The representation is a real thing. And, you know, Erica's a great example that she's out there shining this light. And this is why I would say, you know, I can't tell Indigenous people what the way is forward. I'm basically just another white fella. So I can't make that sort of commentary. But what I can do is try and encourage them. And you know, I try to be as openly supportive as I can, because I want people to shine that light, because we are not going to draw young Indigenous people to wrestling without that sort of representation. They need to see heroes who they can relate to. As someone who is Asian Australian, I watched wrestling for years and years, and the only Asians I saw were evil Mr. Fuji throwing salt in people's eyes. There was no great Asian performer until I discovered Japanese wrestling, obviously, and that's perhaps a large reason why I'm so drawn to Japanese wrestling. I've never really thought about it on a psychoanalytical level, but maybe that's why I was so drawn to it, is because it was something that visibly I could relate to. I had a shared culture and experience with those people that, you know, when I look at the WWE, I didn't see that when I was growing up. And you see the influence of something like how much Kofi Kingston winning the world title, you know, that is, it's a belt that they give to you as a prop, but how much that meant to African-American people watching, and not just kids, but to other performers in the industry who looked at that and were breaking down, grown men breaking down in tears at how much this moment meant to them, because they were being represented on the biggest stage possible within our industry. And I think it's super important that if we want to see a larger and larger inclusion, but also that for the Indigenous people that are already within our community, if we want them to feel comfortable in flying the flag and being able to represent, we need to show them that support. It starts from within. And I think you guys are right that there is a lot of fear there in support, because you are putting yourself out there. And it seems like it's some huge political demonstration for me to say that I care about my other brothers and sisters in this locker room, regardless of what color they are or what culture they are. But that's not a political statement. I'm trying to stand by my friends and the people in my industry. And if in turn, you know, that feels like a political statement, then whatever, fantastic. But it's not a statement of defiance. It's just a statement of support for people in the industry who maybe don't feel like they can be themselves.
I love that statement of support from the locker room. And like, again, I never really thought about it until right now. But I trust and have trusted so many people to pick me up and drop me on my head and not kill me. But whether or not I expect that same support if it came to an issue of race or gender or sex, like you said, it's a matter of standing behind the people who you do business with and who you share a locker room with versus, excuse me, anything else. I'm going to throw to a question that got sent in by Pat Speed at Pat underscore Speed. He asks, and I'll ask this one to Michelle, how would you like to see Australian wrestling create an identity that is unique to Australia than just being a kind of a jumbalaga of British, Japanese, and American pro wrestling, obviously our point of difference being Indigenous Australians?
I think that comes down to us being comfortable waving the flag so people know who we are and know that we are involved. Things like the acknowledgement of country, like having that at the beginning of DVDs or like stream services and stuff like that, I think that's super important as well. That's a really hard question to put as far as like the wrestling itself, because we are a multicultural kind of in a situation where we are quite multicultural and we have taken things from Japan and America and the UK and stuff. But hopefully as far as a, you know, it's, we can borrow, but then you got to change it to suit where we are.
Erica, you know, what about you?
You can't just hijack things from certain places.
Sorry, Sheldon, been to cut you off. Erica, what do you reckon?
No, that's cool.
What was the question again?
It's all good. No one listens to me anyway. I'm going to have to click back because I cleared it off my sheet because I'm a professional and then I forgot what it was. How would you like to see, and Davis, please feel free to chip in after Erica, but how would you like to see Australian wrestling create an identity that is unique to Australia than just being a melting pot of British, Japanese and American wrestling? Obviously, kind of our most unique point of difference being Indigenous Australians.
I mean, I agree with Michelle, obviously. The acknowledgement is a huge thing. I reckon the acknowledgement, I think, like, even if you want to show diversity, why don't, like, companies have, like, a cool gimmick backstage where, like, even if it's just the thing for the boys where everyone brings the flag of their culture and around the ring you can hang that up. And that can be like a gimmick to show that you're all united and you're all coming together. Like, why don't we do, like, not everything has to be super duper serious. Like, obviously it's a serious matter and we're taking it serious, but why don't we have like fun with it? Like, why don't we include everyone? So we, like, Davis can bring his flag. We can bring our flag. We can use any flag, Japanese flag. And like, even where people have trained, like I know Sid trained in the UK. So he has a UK flag in our garage and I have the Aboriginal flag. Like, it's something we've embraced together. So we can use that. Also, like, gimmicks, like people obviously having different gimmicks and kind of embracing their own culture in their own way, whether it be, like, Davis or I don't know if you guys know a guy called Guok in Melbourne, and he's Chinese and he's fucking huge and jacked and awesome. And he embraces his culture. He wears traditional clothing and it's dope. Like, it's so cool. So, I don't, like, culture's a big thing. So, I reckon people, I don't know, having more characters, having more, even respectful and written by Indigenous people, not other people, but respectful storylines. Like, we can, like, Aboriginals used art and dance to tell stories of our culture. Why don't we use wrestling to tell young kids stories of our culture? Like, for example, I could wrestle Sid. He's a frog. There's a story about a frog and how, like, the mountains happened and whatever. Like, I can't exactly remember the story. But, like, we can do stuff like that. Like, I can be the Indigenous person. Sid can be the monster. And I've got to beat down the monster. And the whole, we can have a whole storyline. And we can use like Indigenous like stories and interpret that in our culture, so we can do that. Like, I don't know why, like, I've thought of that and pitched that to people, and people are like, that's stupid, and you're like, all right, whatever, I'll go fuck myself then, that's fine. But like, why don't I think that would be really cool. Like, I know when I was growing up, I didn't have any really good role models. Like one of the quotes that like I really live by is, be the person you needed as a kid. And I'm just trying to be the person I needed as a kid. I just want to be that weird person that's loud and proud. I
100%. Sorry, go.
I think that's just it. Like, I think we can, like, we're not changing the wrestling industry, and we're not, like, we're still using the same exact formula, but why don't we just use Indigenous stories instead of the same recycled stories?
You're doing angles from WWE 40 years ago.
Company has been doing for 100 years. Like, why don't we do that? Like, I think that would be cool. It's like a comic book. There's Indigenous comic books. Come on, guys. Relate to the party. Let's start doing this.
I think the scope of professional wrestling, the goalposts are constantly widening, and we're seeing that with things like the cinematic matches that, you know, WWE have had to put on with COVID-19. Chikara and other companies doing, like, they're very kid-friendly, easy-to-understand comic book-style wrestling.
Yeah.
I definitely think, you know, taking story inspiration from somewhere else is totally doable. But I think when you were talking about, obviously, you know, having culture as a part of your gimmick, it's a statement that I've said so many times in the last week, but I think very much, obviously, being the heel and then having your culture be at the forefront is scary, because, like, and then the statement I've said,
I get that.
Boom me because I'm a heel, not for the flag that I have on my tights.
I agree.
Do you know what I mean?
I 100% agree. That's why I think it should be done, written by folk like us and Indigenous people, because we know where the boundaries are. Like, we're going to have to think hard about it, and we're going to have to, like, it's going to have teething problems because it's a new thing and it hasn't really been done before. But, like, if we did do something like that, there's ways around it. Like, you can feed a story without necessarily having a super villain. Like, it obviously needs a good guy, bad guy, whatever, but, like, it can be done tastefully.
You can take inspiration from the story. You don't need to present it verbatim.
Exactly. It doesn't have to be word for word, but you can use the same premise. Like, each Indigenous story has a meaning. That's the whole point of the story. So you take a life lesson from that story and you go, okay, I'm not going to be a racist for whatever reason because his feathers are different to this guy's feathers, like, just for example.
Yeah.
So we could do that. Why don't we have, like, a storyline where we address racism and have, like, a good guy and a bad guy, and instead of, like, we could obviously use violence because it's wrestling and that's what people want to see. People want to see violence and people getting fucked up, and I'm all for that. But we can do it tastefully, and, like, we all trust each other. So, like, why can't we push the boundaries a little bit, but still respecting, obviously, our elders, we're still respecting our culture, but still teaching people about our culture.
Well, Dave is the only person in the room who's kind of held a for destroying the fourth wall kayfabe's dead in this chat anyway, but as someone who's held a role as a booker for any length of time, do you think, can you discuss the implementing strategies towards inclusivity? Does that at all come at a cost of organic storytelling? Like, are you including these people just to include them and does it hurt the show? Or do you think there is a way to kind of walk that line where you're including everybody because it makes sense, not just because you can?
Yeah, look, it's been tough here because the mandate that I'm given by the people who give me my orders is pretty much they want the best bell-to-bell product, and that storylines and everything else come secondary to best bell-to-bell product. And that can be restricting and limiting in terms of creativity, that you might have someone who's a much better storyteller, but perhaps in ring it's not there in the same sort of quality that It's always been something that's kind of been at the forefront of EPW. That so it can be tricky to, you know, at the moment, and who knows how everything that's going on in the world at the moment changes people's perspectives. The thing on the almost like the company line that's on the wall at our training facility, the main thing that stands out is the world class, the word. And that's kind of been where they've always aimed things at. And it is quite limiting that for me as a storyteller, I'm more drawn to the character who is finding internal issues to confront, rather mm-hmm. than this good guy, bad guy narrative that's been around for, you know, there are some, the best stories in wrestling ever told, most of them are good versus evil. I'm quite drawn to, as Emma's saying, like there's so much scope within that, that within every culture, there are stories of growth and self-development and, you know, being able to include someone of a specific culture in order to tell that story, I think would be amazing for them to be able to draw inspiration from their heritage and from their ancestors to be able to tell a story. I think could be really powerful because, you know, if a wrestler was to go out and draw inspiration from the Bible, they could tell a story of self-improvement and growth. But I'm sure that someone from the Indigenous community can tell a story just as compelling using their heritage instead. That maybe, you know, maybe we have been too limited in the way we've looked at things. But it's a tough balancing act, man. Like depending on, again, sort of knowing what the right stage is for each person, and also putting people in the best circumstances to succeed as well. It's a tricky game, man.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, and it wasn't an easy question, and that's why I asked it to you. Taking a bit of a turn, I got a question here from Kevin again. This is obviously very, not politically motivated, but very situational in terms of where we sit now in terms of what's going on in the world. What does it mean for us here in Australia that the global market leader in pro wrestling has a long history of racially charged angles, and at the worst, actively racist angles, and is in bed at the highest levels with the Republican administration? Somebody take a crack at that. Michelle. Sorry?
Mm-hmm. What is it?
Okay, so Michelle, let me kind of rephrase that because it's a long question. What does it mean for us here in Australia that the WWE, who 99% of wrestling fans knows as the company, has a long history of racially charged angles, and unfortunately they've done racist angles as well, and is in bed with the Trump administration, which obviously, you know, the issues with that administration, this isn't really the place to talk about American politics, but anyone who's turned the TV on for more than 10 seconds kind of knows what's going on.
Okay, so EPW has been dishing out their product for decades, obviously.
Better part of 20 years.
I don't know how many people who watch it would be very, very aware of their political alliance. But the fact that they have been pushing that racial agenda for, it's been a very long time. Like, we all know Nation of Domination and everything. Like,
that was what I was thinking of as well.
They haven't really helped with how people have are perceived in wrestling because of stuff like that. And that can go towards women as well.
Yeah.
Dave, do you think they've turned a corner?
Have we turned a corner?
I think that is kind of mainstream wrestling.
I think that they think they've turned a corner.
Yeah.
I personally am not surprised by this at all, because wrestling, like, I might get heat, but oh well, you won't be mad for too long. I think WWE are like the capitalist of the wrestling industry. And I believe that they think they can get away with everything, disrespecting cultures, disrespecting women, disrespecting relationships. Of course they're doing that. Of course they support Trump. Of course they, like, people who have stood up to WWE, especially talent, about racial stuff, don't have a job for much longer. And that's not a coincidence. They don't want you to speak up. They want you to be hush hush, and they want you to dance monkey dance. That's what I find WWE is. I personally don't watch the product anymore. I haven't for a while. I don't really have any interest. There's a lot more better independent companies out there that produce a better message, that support young kids, that want a better future for wrestling and want to see change and not recycle the same shitty storylines. I love the gay community. Like, I'm bi myself. I have no issues with it. But we're in 2020. Why are they doing a lesbian storyline? When I was a kid, I saw those storylines and I couldn't make sense of it. I didn't think it was funny. I thought it made me uncomfortable. And my mom at some point was like, you need to turn that off because that's weird. That's not the message we want to spread to people, because wrestling brings people together. It brings families together. Like, I used to watch it with my pop. If a pair of titties comes out or a pair of lesbians start making out on the screen, it makes a little bit uncomfortable sitting there when you're trying to enjoy a cup of tea and watch some wrestling with my pop. Yeah. But apparently that's over. And I understand why it's over. I like that too. But I think there's a time and place, especially when there's young kids watching. That's not the message we're supposed to be getting. And WWE don't fucking care. They just want to make money. They don't actually care what they're producing. That's all they are. They're just the capitalists of the wrestling industry. And that's my opinion. And
I, for one, and I can't speak for the other three, I'm very, very glad that the Attitude Era is over, because that stuff doesn't hold up well. And
nah.
but there are TV shows, and I had this discussion the other day where wrestling is always very much on the front foot when it comes to media. There's a reason why, for better or worse, WWE is so ingrained in Twitter. It's because they got there first. Same thing with YouTube, and same thing with pay-per-view. They got to pay-per-view first. They got to a streaming service first, and the biggest sporting organizations in the world are trying to play catch up to fake fighting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I lost train of thought a little bit. There are TV shows out there now that are championing, right? There are characters out there, and the one I'll refer to is something that you just brought up, Erica, in terms of being bisexual. Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
For those of you who haven't watched it, they've got two main characters. One is an openly gay black police captain, and another character gets revealed to be bisexual later in the series. I'm fine, and I can't speak for you guys, I'm fine with culture and sex being character traits, but they're not defining character traits.
Exactly.
If it adds depth to a character, I'm fine with it. But you cannot cheer me, boo me, love me, hate me based on the color of my skin, where I'm from, or who I want to fall in love with.
I agree. Dude, if you want to get your backs out, if you want to get your ass out, get it out. I am all for it. If that's what you want to get out and that's a part of your character, do it. That makes me happy, because that's a character's characteristic. It's a part of a personality. It's not the whole fucking story.
Yes.
There's these women that they have, WWE have probably the best women pool that they've had in many, many years. There are so many talented women, and they're all going to waste because they don't know what the fuck to do with them. So they're like, let's recycle these shitty storylines that worked in the 90s, and now they're not working now. And they're like, I wonder why. It's because people, we're all Pokemon. If you don't evolve, you're not going to be wanted. You're going to be left behind. You need to evolve. Yes, if you make mistakes, accept it, move on, and recognize it. But, we need to evolve. And, some of us have. And you can start to see where people are falling behind. It's showing that people, like, their true colors are really kind of showing now because issues like this are being brought up.
Well, talking about the issues that are being brought up, obviously moving forward, like, I know I got a lot of heat for going to the protest on Saturday. I'm sure you did too.
Yeah, so did I. Yeah.
The fact that you climbed the Matthew Flinders statue cracked me up. Something shocking.
Actually, funny, I didn't. Okay, I'm scared of heights. So I was like, if I get up there, I'm going to get up there and be like, shit, I can't get down. And sit. Yeah, so I didn't. I climbed something else that was a bit smaller and I got my message across and I was like, yay, this is good. That's fine. I'm getting down now. But Sid being like, he just said to me, like, looked at me, he's like, I'm going to climb it. I was like, all right, have fun. And he starts climbing. He's like, pass me your flag. And I was like, oh, no.
Oh, my goodness.
And he's like, pass me the sign. And I'm like, oh, shit. So I pass him the sign. And everyone, as soon as he got up there, he put like a mask on the sign and write Black Lives Matter on the mask and stuff. And as soon as he did it, everyone popped and like he got like a round of applause. And it was like me and my friend had this realization. It was like my friend's partner was also up there and he's ginger too. And we both just looked at each other and we're like, why are the two whitest dudes defacing this statue? And then it just like clicked and I'm like, they won't get in trouble. That's the rib. They're not going to get in trouble. And funny enough, coppers walked past and they just looked at him and looked away. And I was like, well, this is beautiful. So I applaud him because he, like, he's not afraid to support me. So why aren't other people? And he's white as fuck. He's almost transparent. He's
Sid is ginger. Actually the whitest person I know, yeah.
Yeah, he's ginger and he's white and he accepts it. And he embraces me and he supports me and he supports my family and he supports my culture. And by him going to the protest just proved that like other people can. So I don't understand why it's an issue. We have two completely different backgrounds, two completely different upbringings, yeah. And we still have the same frame of mind about this issue.
Well, speaking about the reason I brought up the protests is protests were about momentum and like, yeah, mm-hmm. COVID-19 is a thing. We're in the middle of a pandemic, but very much with this matter, and I think we all can collectively agree, it's kind of now or never, or strike while the iron's hot. Exactly. Moving forward, as Indigenous female wrestlers, how can we as a collective industry, both fans and wrestlers alike, champion Indigenous female wrestlers? Because it very much seems that the next generation of Indigenous wrestlers is going to be mostly women. And I for one, I'm rapt about it. But people like Rochelle Rogue, Ivy Algos.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Are all going to be coming through. And in 10 years, they're going to be at the top of the pile. How can we as an Australian wrestling industry champion Indigenous female wrestlers?
I think...
Michelle?
Yeah, Michelle, you go first. Like... You're older.
First of all, feeling comfortable in your skin around the people that you're wrestling with is going to be really important. Don't do what I did. Don't not embrace it. It is who you are. You know, it is part of who you are. And nothing is going to change that. But people need to be comfortable with people embracing that side of themselves as well and not be intimidated by it. Just embrace it and support it as much as they can. Also, if someone's making those racist or sexist comments, stamp it out. Don't have that. No, none of that.
Shut that shit down.
I wish everyone could see the karate hands that Michelle was doing to shut that shit down. But this is an audio medium. Erica, where do Indigenous LGBTQ folk sit in that conversation moving forward into the next generation of Australian wrestling? Indigenous or otherwise?
I reckon, like, we obviously need to embrace our young ones. And, like, I'm young myself. I'm only 23. Like, I've got a lot of learning to do. I'm still learning a lot, whether it be about myself or my culture. But I know personally we need people to embrace each other. And I agree with Michelle, embracing our bodies, embracing our, like, respecting our bodies. Like, we need to teach our girls how to respect our bodies and obviously keep an eye on them, make sure that they're not going to, like, obviously we trust them. That's not what I'm saying at all, but embrace them, teach them, don't shut them down. Like, I know there's a lot of women, like, in wrestling that do get jealous and will shut you down if you're more popular than them or whatever the case may be. That happens a lot. Yeah. Like, rumors start, shit starts for no apparent reason. And I think that that needs to stop, first of all. For just the women in general, we need to embrace each other and lift each other up. Oh, yeah, and trust me, we'd get a lot, like, more traction than what we're already getting now. We're very talented women in Australia. Like, all of our women across the board are extremely talented. Whether it be physical, whether it be character, whether it be, like, just... We are the next generation of women, and we are probably, like, one of the strongest. And thanks to people like Madison Eagles and, like, all of those big women that did intergender and stuff. But now it's, like, how do I explain it? It's, like, I've got so much in my brain.
It's nice to have a crop of talent. It's nice to have a crop of talent where we can, you know, do things to the best of our ability. Because, and Michelle's a perfect example, for the first decade of her career had, you know, very little full female matches, was constantly doing intergender because for a decade she was the only girl in an entire state.
And I bet it was fucking dope.
It was great. Like, I moved to Melbourne, like, years ago, and I moved there specifically because there was, like, two women's wrestlers, and then one of them dropped off. So, I moved all the way to Melbourne to wrestle these women, and it wasn't until, like, the last 2 weeks I was there that I met Belle. It's just like, I came here to wrestle the wrestle women.
I came here to wrestle girls, and I've wrestled girls. Singular.
We need to be supportive of each other.
100%. That's the key word, is support.
Yeah.
And then Davis, off the back of that support, and obviously in your mentor and teaching and coaching role, how do we create a plan for the future? Like, hashtag Lives Matter is trending now, but in 6 months, a year, 5 years, maybe not. And hopefully it's because everything is even keel. But how do we create a plan for performers of color, you know, whether it be Asian Australians, Indigenous, African Australians, however, how do we create a plan for Australian wrestling to make sure that we don't necessarily have to have this conversation again?
Sure, that's more complex than just the way I look at it at the moment. Is there's all this rage that's built up, and rightfully so. There's all this rage built up that has combusted around this singular event, but it obviously there are so many issues that have led to that rage sort of building up in the first place. But rage to me is kind of like, it's kind of like motivation, that it is the thing that kickstarts, you know, whether it be new year, new me, and we jump in the gym at the 1st of January and motivation's at an all-time high. How are we looking come March and April and May and June? Maybe that motivation is gone, the motivation's died. What keeps us moving towards the goal that we want to achieve? And I think that's the thing that we all of us need to capitalize on this moment to try and get these conversations, continue these conversations, and not just look at this as a moment where we express our rage, particularly as people who are just here as supporters. And I've tried to put it out there that for us as allies, our job is to turn the attention back to you guys. It is not for me to put the focus on myself or the way I feel about these things. It is for me to put the focus on the way you guys feel about these things, because this is not my fight. I'm simply saying I will stand next to you while we fight. And trying to capitalize on this moment to open doors and open conversations, I think, is the most important thing. And too many people that are in a similar position to me, not in terms of wrestling, in terms of life, we have to be cautious that we aren't shutting down discourse by yelling at the other side. Our job is to support, and our job is to try and inform. That if we can get information and put the right voices in people's ears, that hopefully through conversation we can change people's minds, that will actually lead to some sort of change. Because if all we, it's been bugging me ever since I saw it, because I know changing the date of Australia Day is a huge topic, and this would be a perfect moment to, but it also feels like that thing that might, that people might feel like this is the salve that will allow us to get past this conversation. What do we have to do to keep you happy? What do we have to do to keep, to shut you up? Change the date? Yeah, cool. Done. Change the date. Now can we shut up about this and get back to regular programming? But it's not that simple. Changing the date is not the only thing that is going to move us forward and change things in a meaningful way. Would that be a tremendous start? Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. But
that can't be the end of the conversation. That there's so much more to discuss, and it is hard to sit down and listen to stories of hardship, and realize that the life that I enjoy in this country was built on the decimation of a culture. That is a really hard thing to come to terms with, and it is a really hard thing to hear that we need to realize. It was not our generation's fault, but we are now being given the opportunity to help be a part of the solution instead of perpetuating the past. How we do that exactly, mate, I don't know, but we simply cannot afford to scream at the walls for 2 weeks and then just go back to regular programming, because that's not going to change a thing.
That's what I'm really worried about. Like, the fact that it took a really horrendous thing that people saw to have any kind of change actually move forward when these issues have been going on for a very, 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 very long time. And the fact that it wasn't even something that happened in our country that got people to actually talk about it, it's like, yeah, we're here too. You know, we're dealing with some shit too, guys. Mm-hmm. You know, I really appreciate that the horrible thing has opened up a conversation, has opened up a dialogue. I'm very appreciative of that. I'm appreciative that people have done some research and are trying to share the right information. But how long are people going to push that?
Mm.
Like, when is it? I am waiting for the day that it's not mentioned anymore and it just falls to the side, because it has happened before.
Yeah.
You know, we have to keep pushing for something, because the way that our culture is treated and our people are treated is not right. It's not right. And yes, we're striking when the plate's hot right now, but it is getting traction. I just hope that traction continues.
And I think that's very much it. It's about continuing to have those conversations and not appeasing the people who don't want to have the uncomfortable conversations. Like you said, if changing the date is what comes of all this, tremendous, but it's not very much, will that shut you up? Like Davis said, we need to continue to keep having these conversations. But as we start to wrap this up on a positive note, moving forward for the next generation of Indigenous Australian wrestlers, what support would you like to see in the future? Is it, you know, more all Indigenous events or support for upcoming talent? Davis, I know you and I spoke about this offline, so I'll throw to you first.
I mean, I'm very keen to try and get a conversation started. And again, you know, I'm just trying to facilitate the conversation, that your voices are far more important in this conversation than mine is. I'm just fortunate to be in a spot where, due to my work over the last 2 decades, I've got a certain level of respect. I can say things with impunity that maybe other people can't say. And I suppose with age as well, I just don't give a shit.
You got the balls.
The wrong way. So yeah, you know, it's super important to me that we do throw this back to you guys. This is, I can't tell anybody what the best way to move forward is. All I can do is ask you, how do you think we move forward? And then when you give me those answers, not try to change your mind, but try and support you as best that I can. And I would like to see, a level of framework set up that, you know, Australian wrestling promotions, you were asking earlier about culture, Joel, and I think the thing that we lack more so than necessarily a distinct Australian wrestling style, we just lack Australian culture. We feel like a hand-me-down US indie. Most of us do. There's nothing uniquely Australian about us. And by participating more in our communities, and this is not necessarily an Indigenous issue, but it's a beautiful place to start because it is something where maybe we can make a meaningful difference, is we need to reach out to our local communities, whether that be here in Perth or whether that be the wider Australian community. We need to attach ourselves more to our communities, mean more to our communities, instead of trying to mean something to, and it's great if people halfway across the world can relate to the stories that we're telling here and they enjoy the wrestling that we're producing. But the more important thing is to find our own identity, to stand for more than just wrestling. Wrestling is the gate that we use to draw attention to ourselves, and we can use that platform in a more positive way to be able to influence our communities.
Michelle, what about you?
I think, first of all, if you're someone who comes into wrestling, you know, I think it's very important to be proud of who you are, no matter who you are. Be very proud of that. You know, if you feel the need to establish boundaries, I think those boundaries need to be respected.
100%.
If people see something that you might not necessarily be there for, you know, everyone needs to stand up for each other. It's not a case of, okay, that person's gone, now we can talk about them in a derogatory manner. No, it's, you know, stand up for what's fucking right. You know, do the right thing. Oh, that, just do the right thing by each other. You know, if we could all just do the right thing by each other, it would be so nice. It'd be lovely. You know,
and Erica.
I reckon like a good place to kind of start embracing it would be the acknowledgement. That would be dipping the toe in the water to kind of just see how people are going to react and how people are going to kind of, it's going to be a one-off thing, and then, you know, do one show and then the next show they don't, then it'd be like, whatever. But I agree with Michelle. Supporting each other, embracing each other. You are who you are.
Yep.
Don't ever be ashamed of that. Embrace it. It's taken me a couple of years to accept it, to accept who I am. And trust me, life's a lot better when you accept who you are and when you embrace who you are. And you never know what your story can do for someone. If you're open and honest and you get your story out, like Michelle's inspiring to me, to be honest. Like, she's got a different story to me, but when I first met her, she welcomed me with open arms, and it was like it was family. Yes, it felt like, if it sounds wanky as shit, but it felt like family. And I met her mum, and she's beautiful too, and we got like a nice picture, and it was nice. And like, I think everyone should embrace everyone. Like, how cool would it be if we could actually sit backstage or even sit with fans and discuss differences about our culture? Like, just for example, like for food. Food is, like, wrestling is also a good gateway for people to come together and to use our platform. Like, I agree with what David said. Like, that's the whole point why we're here today. But just for example, with food, if we, like, maybe I'm going to sound a little bit ignorant and I don't mean to at all, but if we didn't let Asian cultures in our country, we wouldn't have Asian food. And how fucking good is Asian food? Yeah. If we didn't let Middle Eastern culture in, we wouldn't have Middle Eastern food or Indian food. And by opening that door, like, I like to say, if someone's being like a bit of a dick and a bit racist to me, I'd be like, okay, do you like curry? Do you like rice? okay? You like their food, so why can't you accept the person? That's a part of the person. So you can like certain bits, but you can't like the whole person? Like, what's the issue? Like, if we all just, like, sat backstage and, like, pointed differences, like, yeah, we can have a laugh to each other about our differences in our culture. Me and Aaron do it all the time.
Yeah.
Like, he has a very Western culture and I have a very different culture and we embrace it. We think it's hilarious. Like, I'm going to cook emu for him in a couple of weeks' time. I'm so excited. He's like, oh, wow, emu. I'm excited to try. Like, he's keen to try it. But, like, it's, like, yeah, there's differences, but difference isn't scary. Being different isn't an issue. That's, people are scared of it for some reason. Just listen, like, communicate, listen, and just don't be a dick.
Yeah. Like,
I don't know how.
I think that sums up our almost 2-hour conversation really, really
yeah,
well.
Really.
Just don't be a dick. But I think I can speak for everyone listening, and I know that the three of you and myself included, that if we get a fire lit under our backside and stuff that we can achieve, that we've all achieved individually and what we can achieve collectively is pretty damn incredible. So
yeah.
I'm excited for this to not be the last conversation that we have about these issues, because it's about now and it's about the next generation. Like, the things that I'd like to see, you know, very much are the same based on what you guys spoke about, but putting things in place so that the next generation feels comfortable about wearing their culture on their tights and you know, boo me because I'm a heel, not because of the flag I've got on my bum. Tony, who I believe is still listening, and the other guys on the turnbuckle, on behalf of Davis Storm, Erica Reed and Michelle Hasluck, and the rest of the wider Indigenous pro wrestling community, I want to thank you guys so much for allowing us the platform to have this discussion. So thank you guys so very, very much. You wanna mess with us? Cause we're slinging on the ground.